Well, as you know, since Naomi Osaka's withdrawal from the French Open, that was at the start of the week, the talk of tennis has focused really on a split of responsibilities. On the one hand, a professional tennis player's obligations to the game, including media appearances, and on the other hand, the game's obligation to its players, in particular the preservation of their mental health. Now, a lot of things have been said about Naomi Osaka, some from people that know her and understand the intricacies of professional sport, but I have to say the body of commentary have come from people that simply would know tennis because they watch it, and that's about it. And some of the commentary, I think, has been hurtful, and I think it's been lazy. Well, what do we make of all of this? Naomi Osaka's clearly put a hand up via an online statement, and I think rather bravely, and said, listen, the reason I'm not doing this is because of my mental health. And we keep saying as a society, as a community, we've got to get better talking about mental health. We've got to support people with their mental health. We've got to take the stigmas away from mental health. And yet time and time again, when people put their hand up and say, you know what, I have a problem with my mental health, we chop them down. And we say, oh, look, toughen up. You're soft. What are you whinging about? You paid heaps. You got heaps of sponsors. That's part of the deal. Come on, just go front the cameras. Well, is it that simple? I think a lot of people that are trying to squeeze it into that little mousetrap have probably themselves never suffered from a mental health condition, let alone anxiety. I wanted to turn to Sandy Ray, of course, psychologist and Today Show regular, Herald Sun columnist, about this particular case. And Sandy's been good enough to join us this morning. Sandy, thanks for being there.
No problem.
A lot of things have been said about Naomi Osaka, haven't they? But probably from a lot of people that don't know her and don't know too much about what she's going through.
Look, I think you gave a terrific introduction and a great summary. I think what this has really shown is that we are still leaning on stereotypes about mental health. Oh, I mean, it's completely fallacious to say, oh, because she is rich, because she is an elite athlete, because that's part of her contract, she shouldn't be able to declare and show her vulnerability of her mental health. I think it's unjust. I think it's cruel, and I think it bespeaks a very toxic culture. And I think any official or any journalist who is perpetuating that really needs to be reeled in. And we need to congratulate people who are being brave enough to identify what is vulnerable in their mental health. And we then need to say, what can we do to help? You know, a punitive approach is something out of the 1950s. You know, what we need to do is incentivize other players. We need to incentivize sports people so they don't go into maladaptive coping mechanisms like drinking, like drugs, like risky behavior as a way of managing their mental health. We need to say, let's be supportive. What's going on for this young woman?
Indeed. I mean, look, and I think, to be honest, I mean, her team, I probably even Naomi, have said in the days since the initial fine for not appearing at the press conference, look, we could have gone about this better. We probably could have handled this perhaps more professionally or more neatly. But there again, that also fits into, a bit of a stereotype that even if you've got a lot of support around you, you're always going to make the right calls in very difficult circumstances.
Absolutely. And I mean, you may have all, you know, we know, you know, give an analogy could well be loneliness. You could have a lot of people around you, but still suffer from loneliness. You know, you could look on the outside as very robust and healthy and doing all the right things, but suffer from anxiety and depression. You know, to me, whenever I saw her, she always looked someone who was shy, who was reticent, who didn't actually feel that comfortable. I mean, to me, it was really quite obvious whenever I saw her doing some of those microphone talks, you know. She couldn't wait to get out there quick enough. And I think it's just so unfair that just because people say she's what money, she's an elite athlete, that she should all of a sudden have these skills. You know, to her credit, she's able to block out clearly the crowd noise and get on with doing the job at hand. But she's putting her hand up. And shouldn't the natural response be, what can we do to help?
It should be. From the tennis point of view, many people that are part of that community say, well, look, there are contractual arrangements at play here. This is a big professional institution. And, okay, you've got to go out and perform on the court. But part of the deal is after the match, you've got to go in front of the media and answer some generally pretty inane and silly questions. Yeah. But you've got to go and do it. And if you don't want to do it, well, look, we better fine you, because if you get away with it, others will do it. But then in the mix is obviously this most important issue of mental health. That takes the whole discussion to another level, doesn't it?
It does. Look, it's an impossible, it's a ludicrous argument to suggest that we can contract out of mental health. We don't give a stuff about your mental health because it's in your contract to get up there and perform at the microphone after you win a match. I mean, it's just ridiculous. I mean, again, it, you know, it harks back to the 1950s. Or then, do we contract out of drink drivers? Do we contract out of people who take drugs? And, you know, the community's got to look after these people who take drugs when they're in public hospitals. Do we contract out of people who are morbidly obese and we have to have special equipment for those people in hospitals? Do we contract out of people who smoke cigarettes and have cardiac arrests? So, you know, it's a ludicrous argument to go down that pathway. What we need to do is say, stop. If this is an individual, whichever is going, whatever is going in their life, you know, people who are criminals who can repeat, we need to intervene and say, what can we do to mitigate against these behaviours that are happening to you? That's the sophisticated, intelligent way of approaching people with mental health issues.
I have to say, it struck me as rather extraordinary, the very heavy-handed approach that the tennis community, and really it was, you know, all the Grand Slams and all the others, in concert took against Naomi Osaka here, because, I mean, it's not as if she was saying, can I play with a new form of technology in my racket, or, you know, I don't want to play with any clothes on. What she was simply saying was, I don't want to do the post-match interviews. And to me, it struck me as rather self-indulgent from a lot of the people that obviously make their money out of doing the interviews and are involved in the media world, saying, well, it's abhorrent that you wouldn't want to. I mean, look, at the end of the day, as I said, most fans don't give a stuff what these people say in the interviews. They turn off. No one watches it.
It's the lowest part of the whole.
What does it matter?
Couple of hours that you're watching tennis, is it? Oh, okay. Good interview. Yeah, who cares? You know. But I mean, it wasn't like she was having a tantrum. It wasn't like she was throwing her racket down and misbehaving or abusing other players. She was simply declaring, "I feel really uncomfortable because of my anxiety. I can't cope." And probably she's having panic attacks as well. I need time out. And maybe this is a great opportunity that people will actually be quiet and say, what can we do to help you to make it that maybe in a few months' time you might feel just a little bit stronger to front the media if necessary.
Because, look, the truth is, if she's having this issue, there'll be others in the circuit that haven't yet spoken up. Now, talk me through a little bit about this concept of high-functioning anxiety because, of course, once upon a time a mental illness needed to be shown to disrupt normal life to meet a criteria for a diagnosis. Things are changing, and I mean, it's not just in sport, is it? I mean, all across the professional world, there are people that are functioning on the surface, but below, things aren't quite right.
Look, in essence, you're absolutely right. Everything that you're saying there is absolutely right. But the idea of high functioning anxiety is really a ridiculous terminology. So I'll just quickly run you through to, you know, you talked about how we identify mental illness. And there's a book called The Diagnostic Statistical Manual. So you can't just say, I've got depression. No, you have to evidence it. There's a whole lot of criteria. It might be that you're just feeling sad. You're not having depression. So if I was to write a report on somebody and take it to court and I got a diagnosis, I said, look, this person is suffering from schizophrenia. I go to the DSM and I look at the criteria against which one would measure depression or anxiety or whatever. So the idea of high functioning, I know what they're saying. They're saying that people who are anxious, probably from general anxiety disorder, are running around, they're managing their lives, but underneath, you know, it's like a duck underwater. The feet are going at 100 miles an hour. Fair call. That's absolutely true. But to talk about it as high functioning, it makes it just about, it dilutes the whole diagnosis, I think, of anxiety. And anxiety is often comorbid with depression. I think something like about 82%. And when you think of comorbidity, so it's very hard to single out anxiety away from depression. So both of those diagnoses typically, mostly, go hand in hand.
Well, perhaps it's been a wake-up call, not just for tennis, but the broader sporting community, indeed the professional community, that there will be a lot of Naomi Osakas out there one way or the other, and maybe the reaction needs to change from here on in, hey?
Look, I think absolutely the reaction needs to change, but I think more importantly, we've had lots of wake-up calls, haven't we?
We have, yes.
Sport people, time, and the wake-up call is when they're behaving with the risky behaviours, they're taking drugs, they're engaging in risky sexual misconduct. That's all a wake-up call that a lot of sports people actually aren't managing well. She's, on the scale of that, really just saying, I'm suffering from anxiety, I'm not dealing with it too well. She's not engaging in really being a public nuisance, which we know a lot of sports people, that's how they manage their distress. And when we see, you know, they're on cocaine or they're doing something wrong, that's actually a red flag, not for the conduct themselves, but what's going underneath, what's going on inside their head. And that's, I think, what we really need to take notice of. And I don't think she's alone at all. But I feel very sorry that just such a shy girl, you know, irrespective of her profession and how much money she's got, has got the balls to go out and say, I'm feeling very vulnerable, and she gets shot down like that. I just don't think it's good enough. And I think anyone who's condemned her really needs to rethink their position on how they treat their fellow human beings.
Look, I couldn't have said it better. That's why we spoke to you. Good on you, Sandy. Thank you for that. Much appreciated.
No problem.
Sandy Ray there, psychologist.